Well, good morning, all. It's a pleasure to be here. Grommets. Grommets are an interesting thing. As Crush said, we used to think of them as things we stuck in our ears because we couldn't hear properly. Doctors stuck them in there. Back when I was much younger than now, I first started to hear that term grommet. And it was just the name that we gave to anyone out in the waves that was a pain in the neck. Anyone who we didn't like, anyone who was perceived as not having the same level of skill, or we just want to ostracize them, really. We call them grommets. It actually means something different now. It sort of still means that a bit, but a grommet is actually now referred to as any young, inexperienced participant in an extreme sport. So it's lost its nastiness, and now it actually means something that is far more mainstream in what it refers to. So a grommet is someone who's a learner, someone who's trying to learn something that's difficult, and the older, more experienced people perceive them as being the next generation that comes up. So it's not a bad word. It's a good word. There's this thing that we have that we talk about when we get teenage children, or when our children become teenagers. Some of us actually get teenage children if you join a blended family and you've never had teenage children before, and suddenly you have a 13 or a 15-year-old and you've never had a 10-year-old or a 5-year-old, and that must be an absolutely terrifying experience, I would think. I've talked to a few people in step families who have come into that situation, and they don't manage well. They don't manage well at all, because most of us get used to children as they grow up. But troublesome teenagers, boys when they get to a certain age become really difficult to look after. Girls do as well, but they have a different set of problems. Teenage boys are a varying degree of problems. Some of them are a little problem, some of them are a major problem. I was always thankful that my children were never like I was. And I'm not saying that in any ways as a joke. I was one of the worst teenagers a parent could possibly imagine having. I was every parent's nightmare of what their child will turn into. So if you have a really bad child, they're probably going to grow up to be a counsellor. That's probably the way it's going to work. Is it actually a modern problem? We think of teenage as being a modern problem. We think of the youth of today as being such a terrible thing. But there's a lot of interesting things were said a long time ago. There's this quote I've got for you. It says, "I see no hope for the future of our people if they are dependent on the frivolous youth of today. For certainly all youth are reckless beyond words. When I was a boy, we were taught to be discreet and respectful of elders." Now, isn't that right? When you were boys or girls, you were taught to be respectful. "But the present youth are exceedingly wise and impatient of restraint." Now, that was said by a guy named Hesiod, who was a Babylonian who lived 700 BC. So the problem of teenagers is not new. The problem of teenagers knowing everything is not new. Not quite as old, but still over 100 years ago, the famous American writer Mark Twain said this about himself. "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in 7 years." Now, there's this bumper sticker that says, "Employ a teenager while they still know everything." At another time, Mark Twain said, he must have been in a dark mood this day, "When a boy turns 13, seal him in a barrel and feed him through the knot hole. When he turns 16, plug up the hole." And even about the same time as that first quote I read out from Hesiod, there's this guy wandering around in Israel who was named Elisha. And it says about him that he was going from where he was up to this place called Bethel. And it says, as he was going up, these young lads came out from the city and they mocked him and said to him, "Go on up, you old bald head, go on up, bald head." And when he looked around and saw them, he cursed them, and two bears came out of the woods and attacked them. So there's the solution to the problem. You get a bear, you put it in a cage in the backyard. When your eldest gets to 13, you put it in the cage with the bear. Bear destroys the child. The rest of the children become so terrified they never give you any trouble. It's a really good solution. But this problem of teenagers and youth is not new. For as long as there has been culture, for as long as there has been a civilization, teenagers and adults have clashed with each other. And there's a really good reason for that. When you hit a certain age, and it happens around about 11 or 12, can be a little older, can be a little younger, there's a whole bunch of hormones that change in your body. And they last until you're around about 20-ish. They actually give you a form of hormonal brain damage. They change the way your brain works. You've seen how... I'm not sure whether you might not have seen this, but in my home, when I live under the flight path of the Westpac rescue helicopter that travels to the John Hunter Hospital, when it flies over, I don't get TV reception. It interferes with the digital signal, so it drops out or statics in and out for probably about 30 seconds. Teenagers' brains are like that because of the flow of hormones that are going through their body. This new hormone will suddenly get a surge and it'll kick into their brain, and suddenly their brain will flip into adult mode. And they'll start to try and have these thoughts about being an adult, but they've got no experience at it, so they do strange things. But then the hormone stops and suddenly it flicks back to being a child mode again. They get just as confused as we do, but they're not allowed to say that because it's not cool. So they just get angry about it and take it out on us. So be encouraged. Your teenagers aren't problems because you're a bad parent. That's another issue. That's a separate issue by itself. Even if you're a great parent, your teenagers will still be a problem. It goes with the territory. But the term teenager is new. And the way we think about teenagers is new. The problems aren't, but that is. The word teenager didn't come about until about 1921. Didn't enter the dictionaries until after the Second World War. And the problem is, with that we have now got this category. And because we've got a category, we sort of push them to the side. In the past, there was no category that said teenager. They were just children. Or youths, or young men, or young women, or boys and girls. But now not only do we have teenagers, we also have introduced this new thing, which is tweenies, which is the next one down. And they do the advertising industry does this so that they can market to them. If they can put them into a little package, they can market to them. And if you think of what the way they're marketed to, you think about what they're shown in movies and TVs. Teenagers, particularly the boys, are shown that they can save the world from bad people, that they can beat up adults, that they can have more understanding and wisdom of the world than the adults around them, because the adults are all idiots that don't know what to do. They're demonstrated as showing life and death decisions. It's no wonder that they get confused, because these are the images that the media that they're so involved in teaches them and shows them, that they can do these things. Not enough hands. Now, one of the things that's really quite disturbing that is a modern thing, and some of you in the room will have experienced this firsthand to a small extent. The average age of puberty now is between 10 and 11 years of age. depending on whether you're a male or a female. Girls tend to be slightly younger than boys. In 1980, it was 12.5. 100 years ago, it was 16. The age of puberty, the onset of desire for the other sex, was 16 years of age. So you think about how much more mature a 16-year-old is than a 12-year-old. So the 12-year-old was still a child, quite literally. They looked like a child. There was no hair where it shouldn't be. There was no breasts. There was no pursuing of the other gender. They were children. They just played in the dirt together like children did. But now that has dropped back, and every year it gets just a little younger and a little younger. Some children now are actually experiencing puberty as young as 5 and 6. So you can imagine the turmoil their brain goes through because of the level of immaturity. So it's no wonder they mess up and they get things wrong and they do stupid things. Plus, our modern world is very different. I mean, even when I was a child, and that's, I'm probably old enough to be the parent of half the people in the room, but still, when I was a child, most mums were still at home every day. Most mums didn't have to work because the price of houses wasn't so exorbitant. There was no phone except the landline. I was 9 before we got a phone, literally a phone that didn't even have numbers on the front of it. It just had a little dial. You spun it around and then you picked it up real quick and another person said, number please. And I used to tell them what number I wanted them to ring for me. There was no TV. I was 10 before we got a TV. There was no magazines that were written for teenagers. There was no advertising aimed at teens and tweenies. That's in less than one generation. I'm still here and I plan to be here for quite a bit longer. Now, when I was 9 getting our first phone, my dad was 49 getting his first phone and getting his first TV. So that's a really short space of time that our society has changed so incredibly. So it's no wonder that teenagers haven't really kept up. So some two key pieces of ancient wisdom that I want to share with you that can give you a foundation for what you can actually do to help. This guy named Solomon, he was a king about 3,000 years ago. He said he liked, one of the things he liked to do in his spare time was to actually write down little sayings to help people with their life. One of the things he said was, if you train up a child in the way he should go, when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, some of you have heard that so many times that you've just turned off on me because you think you know what I'm about to say. Sorry, I just lost my place when I said that. I want to actually give you a challenge about what this verse actually means, this parable actually means, rather than what you've always heard it to mean. Whose way are you training up the child in? Because the parable says, train up a child in the way that he should go. The key point is you don't train up a child in the way that you would go if you were the child, being the adult, looking at them. Because you're not them. You don't train them up in some other notion that you've read in the latest self-help book about raising children, about how to look after your kids. You raise them up in the way that they should go. What that means is you must know your child's personality intimately. And it'll be different for each child. If you've got 5 children, every teenager will require a different approach. No one said parenting was easy. It's a real challenge. They don't tell us that when we have children. We think it's all going to be fabulous and they're going to love us and be sweet and nice. And then they let us out of hospital. You must train the child according to their personality and their temperament, not yours or anyone else's. The two most important developmental pieces in the puzzle for a teenager are the two great questions: who am I, and how do I become independent? They're the two things that dominate a teenager's thinking. They're not at all interested in who you think they should be. They really are not interested. They may be intimidated to nod their head and agree with you, but they don't care ultimately who you think they should be. They want to know who they can be. And they want to know how to become the adult that they were meant to be, their independence. They don't want to become a clone of you. And if as a parent you're trying to make them a clone of you, or you're trying to make them a clone of those really good kids who sit down the front and never muck up, or if you try to make them a clone of your parents or the neighbours down the road or whoever it is you've held in your mind as a good example, they will rebel against you because they will be after independence and their own individuality. It is your task as a parent to assist them to find out who they are in a loving and a gracious way. That's the tricky bit. The first part is not that hard, really. The second part, staying loving and gracious in the face of a rampaging teenager, is really hard. And you will get that part of your parenting wrong as often as they get being adult wrong. So I guess give yourself some freedom to make lots of mistakes as parents with your teenagers as well. Boys tend to be a bit harder than girls because boys have this unique and individual and wondrous thing that's called testosterone, which tends to make them competitive. One of the main things of testosterone is competitiveness. So if you tell them to do something, it's a competition. Who's got the strongest willpower? And it comes with the hormonal territory. It's not because they're just trying to be nasty. They're just being what they are. Remember back when your teenagers were about one, maybe, around that age, and they were just so incredibly cute and they were learning how to walk. And they would just toddle about and they would pull themselves up on the lounge and this big smile on their face, they would launch out and then they would fall down and you would pick them up and dust them off and give them another go. You didn't keep them strapped in the walker. You didn't keep them strapped in their stroller, trapped in their cot so that they couldn't fall down and make mistakes. Being a teenager is exactly the same, except they're not learning how to walk, they're learning how to be an adult. It's the beginning of that journey for them, of learning how to become adult, and they will fall down. And they do require you to help them stand back up again. And they require you to make sure they don't fall down the stairs. You didn't let your 2-year-old, your 12-month-old, toddle around at the top of the stairs, or beside a broken glass, or at the edge of the pool, or on the footpath beside the highway. You took care as a parent that where they toddled was appropriate and safe so that they could practice in the right environment. It's exactly the same for your teenagers. They are toddling as adults in their mind. As parents, you give them independence and you give them responsibility that helps them to be in a safe place to fall down and make mistakes. And when they do, you encourage them and pick them back up and help them to try again. A lot of parents, as a counsellor, have asked me over the years, what age should I teach my children responsibilities, things like washing the dishes? I said, well, it doesn't really matter. You just have to have a sense in your mind of what's appropriate. So if you're going to get your 5-year-old to help you with the dishes, don't give them the good Royal Albert bone china to wipe up because they are going to drop it. So it's the same principle again with your teenagers. Don't send your 14-year-old out to a party on their own where they know where you know there's going to be alcohol, and then say to them, but don't you drink, because that's too big of a risk. That's like giving the Royal Albert to the 5-year-old. it's then going to be a disaster when it breaks. So you give them responsibility that is within their capabilities. You might say that to a 17-year-old, but not to a 13-year-old. Years ago, there was a writer in the early church that said the second piece of amazing thing. Fathers, and I'm sorry, fathers, but this is your responsibility. Do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. Don't keep wagging the finger at them, berating them, putting them down, telling them how hopeless they are, telling them what a terrible son they are to their mother, telling them what a disappointment they are to you, telling them all the bad things they're doing, because it will break their heart. And if you do that, why would they want to stay anywhere near you? You have to raise them up in the way that they should go. As a young teenager, I spent most of my weekends finding ways to avoid my father. Not because he put me down, but because his personality was incredibly different to mine. He was a natural worker and a natural task-oriented person. So he would spend most weekends, we lived on a farm, he spent most weekends fencing, chipping weeds, doing all sorts of farming tasks and looking for me to help him. But my natural personality is I'm more of a, I'm like the guy in the castle, I'm an ideas man. I read, I contemplate, I think about things, then I go and put them into practice. Really different personalities. He didn't get that. We didn't get on. If you're continually exasperating your children, they won't keep listening to you. As a manager, the most important lesson I've learned about creating a good team is that I need to encourage them. I need to focus on their strengths. I need to demonstrate that I'm interested in helping them achieve their goals. Not micromanaging them, not bullying them, not trying to make them a copy of me, but trying to help them become the best that they can be. And then I've got the best team. Your family is a team. And as a mum and a dad, you're the managers of your family. If you want to get the best team, then you must know what the strengths are of your children. And you must work to their strengths, not point out their weaknesses. They're just as aware of their weaknesses as you are. They don't want them pointed out any more than you do. Because the more intense the emotional connection between you and the other person, the more important that is. Now I want to leave you with this final thought. How would you manage an adult if you were struggling with the things that they were doing? Would you scream and yell at them after you'd lost your temper? Would you hit them? Would you try to imprison them in their bedroom? Would you take away their most prized possessions from them? Now, if you tried to do that to me, I could assure you that I would be avoiding you as much as I possibly could and be rejecting you as a person as much as I could. And yet, so often, that's the examples that we are told to use with our teenagers. Not necessarily the screaming, yelling and hitting, but that comes often. That's the only ways of discipline we know. But certainly the imprisoning them in their bedroom, time out, go and stay in your bedroom till you can't. They're mini adults. How is that teaching them how to be an adult? Taking their prized possessions away from them, that could be seen as theft in some circumstances. You as parents are giving the example of what it is to be an adult. They're looking at you to learn how to be an adult. If you give them a bad example, they will then dismiss you, they will diss you, and they will look at other adults. So that makes them targets to all the predators that are out there waiting for them. All of the bad examples that are there waiting to capture them, who want to actually tell them that they like them, that they're good at things, and that they can achieve things. Your teenagers desperately want that from you. And they will still be rebellious. That won't stop their rebellion. Remember what I said at the beginning? That goes with the hormonal brain damage. They can't help that. It will pass. But as a parent, you can make it worse. You can make it worse by trying to keep them a small child. You can make it worse by not helping them to explore the world of who they are and their own personality. Simple example. This is what I'm going to finish with from my own family. My son, I played football from the time I was 13 till I was 25, rode motocross, played all sorts of competitive sport, did martial arts for years. So as a father, I had these dreams for my son. We're going to do these things. My son is an artist. He is a musician. He is an academic reader. That we fit on that account. How do I, as a football ex-football player, connect to my son, teenager, who is heavily into art? I actually got him to take me to the New South Wales Art Gallery and show me around. I asked him, we went down on the train, and I just abandoned myself to him for the day. I had the money. I forked out the cash. But he took me around and he showed me the paintings and he talked to me about the artists and about what they were doing. I haven't got a clue what he told me. I do remember arguing about this big piece of thing that was brown, painted Mission Brown, that he called artwork, that I called Mission Brown. But that was like the highlight of the day, because we had this interaction which was on an adult level. And he still talks about that stuff. And he's 27 now. So that's the way you look at your child's personality, you build that personality, your child won't rebel as much. They will still be a teenager though. Thank you very much for giving me your time this morning.